Lara Greaves is a political analyst based at Auckland University. Thanks for joining us once again, Tuhinde. Tēnā koe, Lara.
Mōr ana. Sorry, I just ran from dropping the kid off at the bus stop. Puffed, but, you know, also puffed because of budget week. And, my God, there's so much to keep up with.
Yeah, well, there is really. From a Māori perspective, I recall a budget, Lara, where Māori, the word, wasn't mentioned once. It was a Helen Clark government. Bizarre. Last year, seemingly, a billion dollars afforded to the Māori economy from the Labour government. But we're not anticipating anything of that nature tomorrow. What are the main political and economic pressures that you think are shaping this year's budget? What do you think Māori can expect from Nicola Willis-Aupōpō?
Well, the main thing that we're expecting, and I think everyone's expecting this, but there will be particular impacts among Māori, is that we're expecting way less spending. So way less spending in terms of an operating allowance. They've decided to cut $1 billion from their normal spending each, you know, the year-on-year sort of spending. So I think a lot of people are waiting to see where that will be cut. There's been speculation about things around KiwiSaver. There's other kind of speculation around MSD and benefits, like whether they'd change anything in there. Just different areas and industries speculating as to whether they'll be the next kind of in the firing line, so to speak, and whether there'll be cuts in their area. So we're basically seeing what some people would call austerity, but that's a bit of like a term from sort of 10 years ago to mean cuts to government spending. But more now, Nicola Willis is using the term reprioritisation. That's kind of the government's word, reprioritisation. So this idea that they're not actually pulling money out of the system, they're more reprioritising it. Where we've seen a couple of priorities so far is on the sort of capital spend or infrastructure. They're talking more about spending there. And we've also seen a huge investment in defence spending for like the new helicopters, et cetera, et cetera. So that's kind of an overview there as to what we can expect. Cuts in certain areas, and I think we're all just kind of sort of on the edges of our seat, depending on what you do for a job, waiting to see what's going to get cut.
Yeah. So to the political risks involved here from a government, and certainly one that's halfway through its term, what political risks or opportunities does this budget create for this government?
Well, the big thing for, and this is the case for National and Labor, the big thing for both of those centre parties is they need to capture this kind of mythical median voter who people speculate who it is like, you know, 8, 10, 12% of people in the middle, they float between Labour and National. And, I mean, some of the work that I've done has shown that they are more likely to be women, they're more likely to be kind of middle class, homeowners, suburban moms, that kind of idea. And basically a lot of our politics is around how do you woo them over to your side? How do you get them to vote for you? And that's really the question here is, will National's big political risk is putting them off in some way. And the idea of this pay equity cut, a lot of commentators have said that the cut to the possibility of making a pay equity claim will actually put off a lot of women, a lot of potential kind of swinging voters. That's the risk here for National, is that some swinging voters kind of get put off by the way that they're doing things and don't kind of fall in line with their financial responsibility and smaller government message.
So the pandering to this middle block, the swing voters, predominantly women, homeowners, leafy suburbs, is that nullifying a push into Māori and Pasifika communities? Could more directed targeting into the needs of those communities achieve the same goal, or do you sense Māori and Pasifika peoples not to be in that swing or potential swing voting block in the middle of the fight between our two major parties?
Well, when we do the stats on it, and I haven't done the stats on it for quite a few years now, we think that Māori voters are more likely to be left-wing voters, Pasifika voters are more likely to be left-wing voters, although I think it's changed quite a bit for Pasifika voters over the last few elections. They've become less solid Labour, but still tend to the left. So with those two voting blocks, I think that really, it's hard because there's also a lot of turnout is another factor there as well. If you can motivate Māori and Pasifika voters to turn out for you, to turn out the vote, we've seen it in various Labour campaigns, Labour Party doing them, I think it was 2002, to bring out South Auckland. That's when there is actually a lot of power, but instead it seems like the political parties are focused on this. Again, this mythical, because it's like not really a thing, this statistical median voter profile, this person in the centre, that they're focused on those groups rather than the whole of of society. I mean, this is what MMP is meant to do. MMP is meant to help the smaller voting blocks, although Māori are actually a good chunk of the population now. But MMP is meant to mean that we have minor parties for the needs of Māori voters, for the needs of Pacifica voters, rather than these centre parties trying to focus on them. But something's not quite right, I would argue, in terms of the mix there, where we do see election after election, budget after budget, people not really focused on all New Zealanders or New Zealand's needs across the board. So I think what we can expect from this budget is something moderately generic and not anything particularly targeted at minority communities, at Māori communities, at Pacifica communities, at anyone else, really.
Te Nākui, could you share some thoughts, please, about the Privileges Committee? I mean, it was pretty hot, unprecedented is the term being used, the sanctions or suspensions from Parliament. Now, it was a hot topic yesterday, too hot, really, to debate, and so they preferred to defer. What are you making of the argument here? Many Māori are looking at the Parliament and saying, well, whose house is it? Today's the anniversary of Hobson proclaiming British sovereignty over New Zealand. Subsequently, we've had a Westminster political system ever since that doesn't acknowledge or recognise the mana of our people who allowed others to come and share our land effectively. So what are you making of the standoff here about tikanga, Privileges Committee and suspensions?
Well, it's been pretty intense. There's been a lot happening there, and the story has been in the press for, you know, we're heading to a week now that we've been talking about this. It's interesting because a lot of people seem to be completely missing the point that the rules were set up not to incorporate tikanga Māori, but to be very Pākehā Westminster based, and can't quite getting the point, basically, is going past them in a way where they're like, oh, well, you know, we have to have rules and rules have to maintain order. And they don't quite understand that, like, having a waiata or a haka or whatever in the middle of proceedings and, you know, interrupting it, so to speak, would be tikanga Māori and would actually just be fine under a lot of systems. So they're not really people are not really engaging their brains with, you know, like, hey, yes, there are rules, yes, we have to follow them, but what if it's an unjust rule? You know, that's the kind of thing that you discuss with a 10-year-old. Like, sometimes there's a rule that, you know, it's not just, it's not legitimate, and we need to push up against it to try to break it, try to change it. So people are really not engaging their brains with that part of the debate. I totally acknowledge that people have opinions on the appropriateness of that haka in Parliament. But I think the one thing that I would point to is that, you know, we had 3 minutes of disruption, if that, and 3 weeks. And it's not just 3 weeks, it's 21 sitting days. So it ends up being weeks and weeks of, you know, the two leaders of Te Pāti Māori not being in Parliament. It just feels very disproportionate. I mean, it's set a new record by, you know, multiple times the number of days of Muldoon and his previous record. So I think ultimately it's just disproportionate. It's just disproportionate. And you know what? Like, what ends up happening there is people do the logical jump of, hey, what's different between Te Pāti Māori and the last record, Rob Muldoon? Maybe, just maybe, it's that they're Māori and that, you know, the subject was, you know, a haka disrupting Parliament instead of someone just being a bit rowdy in that Pākehā Westminster sense. So, look, ultimately people are going to have their own opinions on the appropriateness of doing a haka in Parliament, but for 21 days is just unprecedented. It's incredibly long, and of course it was going to be a distraction for the government. Of course it was going to be something that we talked about. You know, there are enough Māori in political spaces with enough of a voice to be, and allies to be able to, like, hey, like, look, 21 days is just ridiculous.
Thank you, Lara, for your thoughts and for dropping off your tamaiti and dashing from the bus stop on our behalf. I appreciate it. Have a good day, sis. Thanks very much.
Thank you.